Welcome to Psyched for Psychology, a Nystrom & Associates podcast. Our hosts, Michelle Iverson and Brett Cushing, are both licensed marriage and family therapists at Nystrom & Associates. Each week, they talk about all things mental health and therapy, and you get a chance to dive into specific psychology topics that help promote personal development and wellness. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle and Brett.
Hello and welcome to another podcast edition of Psyched for Psychology. My name is Brett Cushing.
And I'm Michelle Iverson, and thank you so much for joining us this week. Episodes are being released weekly on Tuesday mornings. You can also email us at podcast@nystromcounseling.com. We would love to hear from you, from all of our viewers. We are getting more and more every week, it seems like, and we are so excited that you are joining us here today. We really wanted to do an episode on that phrase that we hear a lot, just generally in the mainstream, that idea of codependency. We thought that would be a really helpful, really relevant topic. And as we were kind of gathering our stuff together and kind of preparing for this, we started to realize this is a little bit more of a controversial term, I think. Mm-hmm. Then we kind of realized going into getting ready for this podcast today.
It is. And it's something you hear in our culture a lot. People will say things like, oh, that person is so codependent. Mm-hmm. And what are we talking about? And is that helpful? Is it harmful? We're going to try to tease that out a little bit today and delve into a little bit of the controversy and give you some takeaways from this important topic.
Well, and first of all, like, what is even codependency? When we say that somebody is codependent, like Brett said, it's been in the mainstream. And I don't know about you, Brett, I feel like it's been in the mainstream maybe sometimes a little too much, in that it's used maybe a little too broadly, oftentimes just kind of saying this is any type of unhealthy or dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah, it's kind of this panacea for, you know, any capturing all dysfunction. And that's certainly not fair. It's certainly easy, but it's not very fair to do, and it doesn't really help. I think one definition I heard, because this was real popular when I was growing up, and it was the idea that I need you to need me. And that, you know, is similar. We're going to be hearkening back to our previous podcast on self-differentiation and what that is, because there's a lot of overlap with this, and there is this sense of I need you to need me. That's part of my identity. That's sort of what motivates me and how I relate to people. And I don't know who I am. I don't even know how to function unless somebody is dependent upon me.
Exactly. And when we talk about codependency, it's hard because as therapists, like, we don't have a diagnosis for this. This is not in our diagnostic manual that we use. But I think generally there is kind of a bit of an agreeance on this is one very specific dynamic that we will see in a relationship. And it's this idea of one person being a giver, somebody who is sacrificing their own needs, their wants, their desires, often to the point where they might be ignoring their own needs. And the other person in that relationship is identified as a taker, somebody who's developing an extreme form of dependence on the other person.
And we do hear this in as you're talking about relationships, and relationships are everywhere.
Everywhere.
So it's going to be in home. It's going to be with our kids. It's going to be in our workplace. We can be codependent on the person in the drive-thru window. I mean, it really is anywhere a relationship is happening. There is this possibility for what we're calling codependence, and we're going to try to tease that out. What is this? What are we actually talking about some more? But just notice it is a dynamic that where people have this over dependence and this need for someone to be dependent upon them.
And this term's kind of been around for a long time. It started back in the 50s with AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. Started to get a little more recognition, a little bit more use in different substance use treatment programs in the 80s. And they really used it because it felt like something that would be very helpful to address. We're not just treating the person struggling with substances. We're trying to help and treat the family, which is great. And so they kind of saw this term as a way to describe a dynamic that would happen where this person, if we're using that label and that term taker, that person, that taker, was being controlled by their use. And then their loved ones, the givers, were sometimes found to be enabling any substance use behavior. So that's where I kind of started, and it has kind of expanded more. We hear the term a little bit more now in like mental health treatment, and actually a little bit in domestic violence treatment as well, too.
Absolutely. We'll talk a little bit more about mm-hmm. how it can be detrimental to apply this term in domestic violence situations. I am a big fan of AA. I think mm-hmm. it's terrific. So in a way, we're not trying to disparage AA at all. It was really something that resonated in that community, and it was really an observation and conclusion from those observations. So it's we're not trying to disparage it at all. No. We're just trying to highlight there is some controversy about this. So what do you see, Michelle, as the controversy around this term?
Well, I think for one, like there's, and I kind of see this happen a lot, in that sometimes terms that really aren't official diagnoses kind of get used and broadened and used a little too much. So just like with codependency, if we're using it to really label any type of relationship, even if it feels like it's an unhealthy or dysfunctional one, this really is a very specific dynamic. It doesn't really apply very generally, broadly to any dynamic that might be an issue. And part of it, too, even like we see that happen with terms like psychopath, sociopath. Mm-hmm. I've definitely had times in which I've had people be like, this person's a psychopath. I'm like, well, let's talk about that term for a moment. Right. For one, not a diagnosis. And for two, sometimes like, is that really like something that's actually happening here? Mm-hmm. Or are we attempting to put a label on it that might be a little black and white and not seeing the nuance mm-hmm. of maybe like what is actually occurring?
Well, another concern that can be with this term is that it's used in terms of in cases of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And it can sort of be used to identify, let's say, a woman who is being abused domestically by her intimate partner. Mm-hmm. And people are quick to say, well, she's codependent for allowing this to happen. And that is extremely unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely ignorant to mm-hmm. be able to say something like that without really understanding the dynamics of domestic violence. Because mm-hmm. in the idea of domestic violence, we have this notion that it's a woman who's just passive and she's allowing this to happen. She's being a victim. And that's not the case in domestic violence. For the woman who, let's say, and actually it does happen with men too, but just for simplicity's sake, I'll say it's happening to a woman. And it can happen to very assertive women too. Mm-hmm. And it's the result of very intentional tactics that the abuser is using to try to control the other person. So that abuser will use tactics like gaslighting and isolating the person, shaming them, and insulating them from all of their other support networks. And so we'll have to do a whole other podcast domestic violence. Yes. I won't even get going on it now, but suffice to say that it's really an unfortunate thing to say about people who are being survivors of domestic violence. And it's also so damaging and unhelpful.
And creates victim blaming, which we don't want to see in that particular treatment realm. But I think part of what some of the kind of the concern with it is, can this potentially try to stigmatize what we do in relationships when we care about a loved one who is really, really struggling, whether it's something like substance use or mental health? Overall, like we know we are biologically and psychologically, we are hardwired to sometimes put other people's needs above our own at times. And sometimes, again, there can be concern overall, like in the community, like is this phrase sometimes laying blame on that giving person as being enabling and maybe not doing enough to say for that taker, again, if we use those labels, for just needing to take some responsibility for their own actions or trying to change. And also, like we said, there's just times in which we just kind of know that term just wouldn't be appropriate. Domestic violence. Another time, too, is if somebody's actually suffering with something that we can diagnose, that is a true diagnosis, called dependent personality disorder. That is a formal diagnosis. And that is somebody who is not struggling in one relationship in which this, again, if we use the term codependency, where that might be occurring, it's really a pattern of dependency and enmeshment that they are having with many people in their life. It's a very consistent pattern of behavior. And even that term personality disorder, I will always tell people, I'm like, it's just a collection of symptoms. Mm-hmm. This does not have to mean if somebody had dependent personality disorder, that's just who I am and I can't do anything about it, right? Like, no, like there's treatment for that. It's symptoms. Symptoms go away. Diagnosis can go away.
Right. And as I'm thinking about this, as we discuss it, I'm struck by how we have a tendency to react. Mm-hmm. When things are happening outside of our control, mm-hmm. we react in trying to establish control in some way. So, mm-hmm. for instance, you see somebody who has had a loved one die. Mm-hmm. I've seen this so many times at funerals where somebody says, well, at least they're in a better place. Mm-hmm. And, well, at least they're out of pain. Mm-hmm. And so we say those things because we can't handle the other person's pain. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to fix them and their pain so that I can feel better. Mm-hmm. And it's just an act of control when we're feeling out of control. And I think we do this a lot with terms mm-hmm. and labels. And we need to be very careful because am I just really trying to control somebody mm-hmm. when I see a difficult relationship dynamic happening? For instance, let's take domestic violence mm-hmm. and just sort of throw this out there like, well, she's just being codependent. That doesn't really help. And it's really, I think, a way for people to try to subtly try to take some control of the situation mm-hmm. that is really bothering themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's really a very selfish act when you think about it that way.
It's really hard when we work in a field where we work with complex human beings. And then when we throw in relationships, they just become that much more complex. And so I think as a field, we continuously attempt to try to find ways to be able to describe mm-hmm. what is happening. And it's hard when we're trying to use one term, one word even, mm-hmm. and this isn't even just about codependency, just one word in any case, to really describe a complex human being in a very complex relationship.
So in other words, we need a sense of humility mm-hmm. when we're, even for us as therapists, we need to have this humility about ourselves and when we're coming up with a diagnosis for a client and understand that, hey, this is what we're seeing. We may not see the whole picture. And even our diagnostic manual is an ever evolving piece of literature for us to refer to. And we need to have humility as professionals, but also I think in everyday relationships for people that aren't professionals in the field, there needs to be humility when we're seeing difficulty, when we're mm-hmm. seeing dysfunction, when we're seeing pain, and just have more compassion and be slow to speak and quick to listen.
Mm-hmm. So when we think about rather than use of a one word and a label to kind of describe something very complex, we were really kind of looking at if we look beyond the label, right? Which, mm-hmm. again, not to disparage the creation of the label in the first place, that was really, we needed something to describe a dynamic that was mm-hmm. happening. And often in substance use treatment happens. But if we look past and beyond the label, I think it's really helpful to look at what are the actual, the aspects of the relationship that would put up a red flag and be concerns and be things to mm-hmm. seek help for, even if it's your loved one that is going through substance use mental health treatment. You might need your own support as well, too, mm-hmm. especially if you see any of these signs happening in that relationship.
So I totally agree. I think of this some more and I think, well, what are the signs of what we're talking about here? And what should we be concerned about more specifically? What do you think?
I think we're looking for, does there feel to be like an inequity of power that really kind of promotes the needs of one person, that person who is struggling? And then leaving the other person to feel like they still have to keep giving, often at the sacrifice of themselves. So couple things to be looking for that could be potential warning signs. Do I have a sense of I'm walking on eggshells all the time to try to avoid conflict with that person? Am I often the one, the only one who continues to have to apologize, especially even if you did nothing wrong?
That's a good one, too. I tell people a lot of times, a lot of my clients, if I notice they're having this easy default to apologize for things, I encourage them to not apologize for anything and begins replacing the words, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, with, hey, thanks for understanding. It sort of gives them a reframe. It's a much more positive way to approach things. And it doesn't assume a double negative. It assumes a double positive, that I can make mistakes and you're the kind of person that understands. So something I'm glad you mentioned that one about the apologies. That's a big one for me.
Another one would be, am I regularly trying to change or rescue people? White knight syndrome is like one way I've heard one person put it. And in particular, change or rescue people who are like quote unquote troubled or struggling with substances or mental health, or they're under functioning, which we talked about in our previous podcast on self-differentiation. And these are really all problems that go beyond your own actual ability to fix or help.
Absolutely. And it's also doing anything for another person, even if it makes you feel uncomfortable. The difficulty with that is, I think when we are so prone to this, we are uncomfortable all the time, but we don't see it because it's so normalized that I'm feeling uncomfortable as I help other people and sacrifice for other people. I don't realize I'm uncomfortable. So that's a tricky one, because we can get so accustomed to that way of life that just seems normal.
If you're finding yourself needing that other people have to like you in order for you to feel good about yourself, that would be a concern. If I'm struggling to find any time for myself, especially if all my free time is consistently going to the other person who's struggling.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think of Mr. Incredible on The Incredibles. My daughter said that once. Dad, you remind me of Mr. Incredible. And I'm like, hey, cool. What dad doesn't want to hear that from his daughter? And I said, well, tell me what you mean. And she said, you know, in the beginning of the movie, when he kept feeling like there was always a call, there was another radio call for police or a burglary or something, and he kept looking at his watch, even though he was trying to get to his wedding, he would always look at his watch and he would always say, yeah, I got time. Yeah, I got time. And she said, yeah, that's how you remind me of Mr. Incredible. And I realized, I need to take a closer look at that. Because I was always saying, yeah, I can do that. I can fit that in. I can fit that in. And that just, it's not necessarily bad. Mm-hmm. It is something to take a look at, though.
Right. But especially if we're seeing this dynamic with a relationship where it's always that one other person who's continuing to have that time from you, how do we work with a person to try to reclaim that?
Right. And really what happens then is we do lose our sense of self in the relationship. And the relationship, it really isn't a relationship anymore. It's one person. And everything is happening about that one person. Every consideration is about that one person. And so that is hard as well, because we don't realize we've lost our identity, because we believe our identity is helping this other person all the time. So it's really tricky, and it's very subtle, but it does take a lot of serious thought to try to unearth this.
We're also looking at things where if you're in a caretaking, rescuing relationship, and it seems clear that that person's like avoiding a responsibility, age appropriate, but still avoiding a responsibility that they can do, or working on personal change. And just avoiding sometimes progress or sometimes even treatment for a lot of people. If we notice that that particular pattern is happening, that could be something, a warning sign, something to look for.
It is. And another warning sign, maybe you can elaborate more on this, is like when takers, they engage in the flip side of what we've been talking about, using or imposing upon their relationships to avoid responsibility. You have the taker that's avoiding their life progress and their personal change. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that's something that, sometimes we might see where if somebody is coming in and They know they're not in a stage of change where they feel ready to really kind of start that internal work, which is okay, right? That's not bad. Like, we can work with a lot of people in treatment on how do we move through feeling ready to make changes in your life when it comes to your health and your treatment. But sometimes people will be in this pattern, this dynamic with a partner or family member, where they're trying to, you know, kind of flip it onto the other person, right? And mm-hmm. part of that is resistance. And I think resistance is an important aspect of treatment. We have to figure out how to work with that person on their resistance, even if they are trying to push. I don't need change. This is all about them. We can smiling. Work with yeah. people on that.
I'm smiling and I'm laughing because I think in any form of therapy that's mm-hmm. effective, there is inevitably resistance mm-hmm. that we have to address and we need to work through, and we need to ask what's the threat of becoming more willing and less resistant. But it's an important thing to think about.
A colleague of mine calls it stuck work. And stuck I work. Love that phrase. And I think about we do stuck work with individuals when the individual is stuck with mm-hmm. Nothing will change. I can't change. Mm-hmm. I think of this is the relationship version of that. Right. Our relationship. We are stuck in mm-hmm. this dynamic. And
I like that.
Yeah. Often at least one person knows it needs to change, but they're having a hard time with that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I like stuck because it's less of a negative mm-hmm. Pejorative thing. Like people have a resistance to being told that they're being resistant. So I like that term. You know, we've talked about terms and we've talked about codependency mm-hmm. and how it's a interesting term that had a unique history. It has not made into our diagnostic manual. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be careful with it. Mm-hmm. And we also need to be aware of some of the concerns when we are might find ourselves to be codependent.
I was going to say, and we've used a term because we need something to describe what's happening, but this kind of comes back to labels, just right. labels in general, in terms of life and especially with mental health. We need something to describe, but we also can't get stuck into the rigidity of trying to describe with one word really, really complex dynamics in relationships. Mm-hmm. So I think it's been an important term to attempt to describe what's happening, but also from what we just described of some of these like warning signs, look for, that's really complex. That's right. A lot of really complex things
yeah. happening. Even in our discussion here, we've a couple times talked about terms mm-hmm. and even the term resistant mm-hmm. that has a negative connotation to it, that someone's being resistant, mm-hmm. but stuck. Why? That's a lot more palatable, I think, mm-hmm. for people. And is there another term that might be a little more palatable mm-hmm. Than codependent?
So there is information out there. It's something a little new, but there is a little bit of a push by some people to try a different term. And they like the term pro-dependence, which quite honestly, that is a brand new term for me. I had not heard that term before. Like mm-hmm. I had been in the line of like, you know, when we look for if we're looking for one word to attempt to describe this relationship and what's happening, I would go to codependency and mm-hmm. codependence. But there's actually this alternate term. And I thought this was really interesting. And I thought it'd be really nice to kind of like share and talk about that with the podcast today. This idea of pro-dependence. And what does that mean if we use that term instead? So it's about describing that loving the person who is struggling can be done unconditionally and can be done with having an emotional connection with them while also having healthy boundaries at the same time.
Right. I really like that. It does remind me again of our previous podcast on self-differentiation. Mm-hmm. You can have a sense of uniqueness mm-hmm. and closeness with somebody. And another way to think about it is that we generally have this need to detach with love. And if the person refuses to change or grow. So it's clarity about what I'm responsible for. I can still love somebody unconditionally, like you were saying, and have a connection with them without feeling the sense of responsibility for them. Mm-hmm.
You know, I really, what I like about that too is, quite honestly, if we use the term codependence or codependency to describe relationship, that's always the end outcome that we hope for through treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Is how do we love unconditionally, have that emotional connection, but also build that healthy support and boundaries? And it is self-differentiation that we are helping to build into and bring into that relationship. So ultimately, I think we were still always working to achieve that end goal.
Mm-hmm.
But I do really love that this term is working to try to encapsulate that, and helping that to be a less stigmatizing label, essentially.
Yeah, maybe I can offer just a little parable about that as an illustration. Let's say you have one spouse who is struggling with some ailments, some physical ailments, and they're going to go on a trip. And so the other spouse, let's say it's the husband, is going to say, "Hey, I know you're not feeling well. I'll get the bags for you, and mm-hmm. I'll pack for you. And don't worry, I'll pack the car. And don't worry, I'll unpack the car at the airport. Oh, and don't worry, I'll carry your bags for you. And I'll get us through, you know, security. And I'll get the taxi, and I'll unpack when we get to the hotel. And I'll unpack this, and I'll do that."
Mm-hmm.
And this person's doing everything. And then the spouse, the wife, says, "You know, a little frustrated with you." Mm-hmm. And he could be saying, "Well, frustrated with me? Wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm husband of the year here. Where's my husband badge?"
Mm-hmm.
And she says to him, "Well, you know, I was struggling enough. There was so much that I really couldn't do already. And you took the one thing I still had left that I had control over, which was my ability to choose."
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we have an example where the husband would be trying to be loving, but that over-functioning again and doing things for the other that the other could be doing for themselves. It's in a way, when we look at it, it's not as loving as being able to say, "I'm still going to defer to your choice."
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it's that idea of like, how do we offer emotional support, but not necessarily do tasks,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially if it's something that the person can do or even needs to do for themselves. It's this concept of really no labels. A little ironic, it is a label, but it really supports no labels, no pathology, just love, support, direction, that we celebrate and we don't forget to celebrate and value the caregiver's willingness to support and stay connected, while also promoting that the whole family or that relationship also needs its own healing. And it also recognizes at the same time, too, that sometimes that caregiver, sometimes their actions can, quote unquote, run off the rails. And sometimes mm-hmm. they do become counterproductive. That can be seen through potentially enabling raging enmeshment behaviors. And so prodependence really sees, though, that like, it's kind of like stuck work, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
there is something to this that we need to take a closer look at. It's trying to serve a purpose. It's just not serving a purpose that's helping. And so with this, it's saying those actions are an attempt, like you're trying to maintain and restore your family and your relationship, but these behaviors are just getting that off track. What can we do to get you back on track again?
Right. I think in addition to prodependence, another term that I think is helpful for people in relationships is interdependence.
Mm-hmm.
Is the relationship characterized by a mutual dependency upon one another?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not going both ways, if it doesn't have a good dialectical balance where I depend on you sometimes, you depend on mm-hmm. me sometimes, and we both need each other. There's a phrase I see all over that we're better together. And mm-hmm. I think inherent within that is this concept of mutual dependency upon each other. I know from my wife and I, she's great. She totally balances me where I need to be balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And after 27 years, we've, you know, really learned and grown to appreciate that. It's hard at first because it's like, oh, you know, you drive me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And then you grow to appreciate that you really balance me too.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to value that. And so interdependence is a good word, I think, for people in relationships to ask to themselves, are we really interdependent or is this out of balance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I really appreciate this today, it's such a funny irony, I think, working in this field is that We often have to use labels in order to get things covered with insurance. We need to have a diagnosis in order to do our billing and things like that. Like all these things require diagnoses and sometimes labels. And it's always helpful to have that reminder of like, we need to really take a closer look. Can the label help or could it potentially hurt? And also we're growing as a field, which is really amazing too. Mm-hmm. A lot of things that we used to use, and even like recently we had an update to our diagnostic manual that we use, a mm-hmm. Few kind of minor tweaks to it, but important ones, because with new research, we now can update it with more culturally relevant information. And that includes taking a closer look at terms, words, labels we use, and updating, sometimes changing, starting to move towards things that end up really kind of closely looking at and evaluating. Can things be more complex than just one word might describe? And I think that just kind of sums up what it kind of felt like in looking at that word and taking a closer look at it today.
Yeah, I think my takeaway is we think about codependency and the broader view of things of labels. You know, labels do change. Mm-hmm. Back in the 1970s, if I said I was, and I am a Green Bay Packer fan. Sorry, everybody.
Sorry to all the Vikings fans.
But everybody would laugh at me. You know, back in the 70s, Green Bay Packer, you know, Vikings fans would laugh. They're like, oh, now it's taken on a little different meaning. I won't elaborate more. But I think people know what I'm talking about. And so we need to understand these labels and the connotations. They evolve and change over time. And I think, my takeaway is we need to have a sense of humility. Mm-hmm. We need to have an ongoing sense of inquiry mm-hmm. as well, and trying to learn and grow and trying to avoid our natural tendency, I think, is to try to control. Mm-hmm. So we hope you have your own takeaways from our time together today. We want to thank you so much for joining us today. And we believe we will be able to continually scratch the itches you have here on Psych for Psychology. Please make sure to like and share and subscribe to our Psych for Psychology podcast. We will have new episodes being released every Tuesday morning. So you can find us on any major podcast streaming platform, and you can follow us for our new episodes.
Please email us your comments to podcast@nystromcounseling.com. Let us know any topics that you'd be psyched to hear us talk about. And again, you can learn more about us and Nystrom Associates by going to nystromcounseling.com. Thank you so much for joining. We're psyched to talk to you again soon.
Thank you as always for listening, and please be sure to leave us a review. While this podcast can't be a replacement for therapy, we hope you enjoyed our discussion today and join us again next time. Nystrom Associates is always available to those who are struggling. If you find yourself in need of support and help, please check us out at nystromcounseling.com.